Welcome back to the Hoops Temple podcast. Y'all know me, Nathan Schwartz, and join us from New Zealand, Dylan Williamson.
Good morning, Nate.
Good evening. Well, afternoon. I don't know what time it is. It's Dylan. It's good to see you. Sorry I missed last week for Thanksgiving. I'm sorry that you don't have Thanksgiving. You only have the second greatest holiday in the month of November, Black Friday.
Yeah, that one has managed to totally penetrate New Zealand culture. 3 years ago, it wasn't a thing. It is now the biggest sales day of the year.
Do you know anything about the 1976 ABA All-Star Game?
not a damn thing.
It's super cool because it's the year before the merger, and like the ABA is failing. They still have these superstars, so they want to do an All-Star Game, but they're down to seven teams. So they like, I mean, you can't do an All-Star Game with seven teams, because there's just too many All-Stars. So what they did is they did All-Stars versus the Denver Nuggets.
Okay.
They
why the Denver Nuggets?
The Nuggets
were the champs.
They were not. But, they chose them before the season, and the previous year they had won 65 games in the regular season. They took the Pacers to Game 7 of the NBA Finals, and they were the presumptive favorites to win the championship.
Right.
So they set all of this up before the season started, and it's Nuggets versus all other ABA All-Stars, and the Nuggets win.
Yeah. That is amazing. I mean, there's like a big difference between like a, you know, a team that's played together and is constructed as an actual roster and just like all-star team or just like throwing all together all the best guys, which is sort of where I wanted to go with this, as opposed to just being like, here are the 10 best players or 12 best players from whatever, like actually put together a team and see who would actually win this game.
So can you explain to me what this is? Explain to the listeners what the plan is for this hypothetical all-star superstar team draft building.
I don't know if there's like an equivalent in American sports, but in the NRL, which is an Australian rugby league, probably like 90% of the players come from one of two states, either New South Wales or Queensland. And so once a year, they pick the best players from both of those states, construct a team, New South Wales versus Queensland, best of three game series. And so my idea was, well, we'll do the same thing in the NBA and have a hypothetical seven game series. That way you've got something to play for. It's for the pride of your home.
Now, in doing this, you have arbitrarily designed a line down the middle of the US, going Wisconsin, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any like actual significance or like whether there's a true East versus West delineation in the US, but that kind of made the most sense in terms of like splitting up the states evenly. And the other thing too is that like a lot of these guys are from one, or you know, were born and mostly raised in one, you know, town, but then played high school basketball in another town or another city. A couple of them even played in like different states. So I tried to base it on like where you actually grew up. And so, you know, a lot of these guys were born one place, but like never really even lived there.
Yeah.
And so birth was less important. And then, where the information was available, tried to see where they actually grew up.
Nice. All right. Well, how do you want to do this?
So you're representing the great state of Michigan in the eastern United States, and I am representing the Pacific Southwest. Very Pacific, very south, very west of the United States.
Fair enough. Now, since we're not selecting from the same player pool, did you already go ahead and build your team, or...
No, I thought we'll do it on the fly.
Okay.
If you do something weird, I'm going to have to counter it. But I'm thinking we just go 1 through 5 and then pick a bench.
All right. So we're selecting our teams in preparation for a hypothetical seven-game series. I like it.
First off, starting off with a curveball. at my starting point guard, I'm taking from the great state of Texas, the Boston Celtics, Marcus Smart.
You've chosen Marcus Smart as your starting point guard. This is the best Marcus you can Smart come up with.
As my starting point guard.
This is the best you can come up with.
The best defensive guard in the league, the starting point guard on the league's best offense, a guy that can fit in around some of these other stars that I'm inevitably going to pick. And so with my first pick out of Texas at the starting one is Marcus Smart, reigning defensive player of the year.
This is terrible. this is already terrible. And I'm picking Steph Curry. I have zero regrets about Steph Curry. Listen, the man is honestly pretty close to going for a third MVP. Like, if season ended today, there's a good shot that he wins this. To be putting up the same stat line at 34 that you put up during a unanimous MVP season at 27, like, Golden State should be ashamed of themselves. I've been watching a lot of Portland, and Portland kind of has the two timelines thing going on right now with Simons and with Sharp, and then Jeremy Grant is like that bridge piece. But they're just doing it so much better.
And like the big thing for the Warriors is that their bench is absolutely awful. When the starters are on, the Warriors are plus 26.4, which is the fourth best lineup in the entire NBA. And they're, what are they, 500 at the moment? And so, yeah, that lackluster bench is really pulling down a really tremendous, ridiculously good season from Steph. Although I kind of like that I picked Marcus Smart now, because at least I've got someone to try to defend him.
You can't defend him. And here's the thing. You've given me someone to hide Curry on.
Hey, Marcus Smart is one of the best post-up point guards in the NBA, okay? If I get Marcus Smart on the block against Steph Curry...
Do it. If the grand scheme of the Western team is like a seven-game strategy is let's post up Steph Curry, great. That's awesome. I love it.
I'm just going to put shooters around Marcus Smart. I'm going to have him play make out of the post.
Oh, my God. Do it. All right. Who's your next player?
From the state that I think will have the highest representation on my team, from California, two-way player Paul George. Give us some shooting, some ball handling, some shot creation, and still all NBA caliber defense. The size to switch, the quickness to stay on guards, and a tough matchup being able to play the two at 6'8 to 6'10, somewhere in that range.
I like the choice going for size. I tried to watch some Paul George recently and instead was treated to the Marcus Morris show. Can I actually ask you, who would you take right now, Marcus Morris or Lauri Markkanen? And I know that sounds really crazy, but Morris is super stable as like a guy that can come in and get you 18 to 20 when your stars aren't there. And then when they are there, he decreases his role and just puts more energy and effort into rebounding and defense. And like Lowry, I've been watching him and I'm trying to figure out exactly how I feel about him, because there's a good chance he can be a one-time All-Star this year or get an All-Star appearance. He's really bad defensively. He doesn't bring you much outside of scoring. And if he's not scoring well, what's he doing? Like, I don't know how scalable of a player he is. I also think that you need to play him at small forward, but he's not fast enough to defend on the wing. Like, there's just like such a weird, you know, puzzle piece to put together. So who would you take?
I guess it really depends on the team and what your needs are. Like, if he's been your first option or your second option like he is in Utah, then probably Lowry's a better pick. And so if we're talking about a fourth option, then I think Marcus Morris would be the better pick. And he has come in huge for the Clippers at certain moments. You know, Ty Lue loves to run ATOs for him and get him a good shot in the mid-range. And I feel like I've never seen Marcus Morris miss a mid-range jump shot.
That's an aside. I don't actually expect Marcus Morris to show up in this exercise. If he does, that will be a curveball. So I guess for my two to match up, because you've gone huge. You've got a 6'10 in shooting guard right now. I'm going to downsize Brandon Ingram and bring him in. Ingram's off to an okay start start to the year, 20 points per game, basically 5-5. Ingram's passing and his defense will come through. And one of the fun things about Ingram this year is he's shooting 46% from three.
Yeah.
So relying on that defense at length, but also that 3-point shooting.
Yeah, no, it's a good pick. 25-5 on one of the more pleasantly surprising teams this year. And yeah, you've gone ahead and chosen a backcourt that's going to put up, you know, over 40% 3-point shooting.
Oh, my team's not going to miss from three.
Yeah, I'd like to say my team won't with the rest of the squad, but I think Marcus Smart will take a few pull-up jump shots every now and then.
Yeah, I don't. That was a bad call. This is a bad call.
All right. One of the other standout players this year in terms of front runners for MVP, putting up 38-5 on the best team in the NBA, only 24 years of age, out of Missouri, Jason Tatum at the three. Continuing with my theory of strong perimeter defenders, switchability, and floor spacing.
He was also become a better passer. That was something that we saw towards the end of last season, but it's continued to improve. His assists are up and his turnovers are down in the early part of the year, which when you also consider the fact that his scoring is up, like he's just becoming an overall more efficient player, improved field goal percentage, improved free throw percentage. Like he's no other way to describe it. He's becoming a top five player, whether I like it or not.
Yeah, the biggest knock that you can make against Tatum previously was, I guess, the passing, the ball handling, the movement. But if you look at, like you say, assists up, turnovers down, and the number one offense in the league by far, I think it's hard to knock him.
Yeah. I was watching them play the Mavs the other day, and he's getting regular looks defending Luka. The Celtics were switching who was defending Luka on almost every possession. They were going White, Tatum, Horford, then rotating back through. And I think that's just telling that they trust Tatum enough to defend Luka and not to try to hide him where he's not going to pick up fouls. Tatum also had an amazing block on Dorian Finney-Smith. So that was the obvious choice.
Yeah, probably the most clear-cut pick for my squad.
To which I will counter with Kevin Durant.
Representing Maryland, up at 29 points per game, 5.5 assists, 7 rebounds, a proven championship caliber player, a guy that can take over a game if you need him to, probably maybe the best shooter of all time, and we've seen him go one-on-one with LeBron James in the playoffs and win that matchup on both ends.
Also, just looking at what he's doing this season, the Nets are a very poor defensive roster. Just with Simmons not playing as much, Royce O'Neal was not good to start. Durant has kind of become their last line of defense, and I'd kind of planned him more to be the four, but he just feels like the natural counter to a Tatum pick to have this Durant offensive and defensive combo. I do think that this is some of the best basketball we've seen from Durant. Hopefully Brooklyn figures it out, because I don't want to see this Durant season wasted.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the offensive impact, the offensive on-off for Kevin Durant is plus 17.5. You know, you look at that semi-controversial quote that me and Aaron talked about last week. It really is just Kevin Durant. The only reason that you expect the Nets to do anything is because of Kevin Durant, and the numbers say when Kevin Durant is in, you're awesome, and without him, they're terrible.
Well, those numbers don't quite give Yuta Watanabe enough love. Offensive rating of 144, defensive rating of 116, not too shabby. Also 50% from three, 57% from three. Like, come on, you got to give Yuta some love.
Yeah, although I do think that Kevin Durant will be fine in this game without his number two option.
Wait, who says I'm not picking Yuta?
Alright. You ready for my next guy?
Yeah.
Alright. So this one's a little bit tricky because the guy I'm gonna take at his best is one of the best players in the NBA and when he's been at his peak, a very strong argument that he was the best player in the world at that time. Multiple time champion, multiple time finals MVP, but a guy who has been so marred by injuries and inconsistency in terms of availability that he almost got forgotten off of my list because he's only averaging 10 points per game this year. But Kawhi Leonard has proven to be one of the best single game players for the Raptors on his way to leading them to their first championship. Some insane performances for the Clippers as well. We hope for his health. We'll take him at the four and we'll have faith in him.
I really hate to say this. I think I'm ready to call it on Kawhi. He's not been healthy for so long. The more times this happens, more often than not, guys are done. He's played in 5 games since coming back and has not looked particularly great. Like, this is how careers end.
He has struggled so much with injury that he's barely played in the last few seasons. When he has played, he's been one of the best players in the league, and I really had to make a tough decision whether or not to pick him. And so it's a riskier pick. The upside is phenomenal, obviously, but there is a very high chance of disaster at my starting four.
Well, then I guess I'll match you, going with an equal risk of disaster, with LeBron James. James at age 38, averaging 26 points, 9 rebounds, 6.5 assists, and the three-point shooting has plummeted. He's now down to 28%. But if we're talking team construction here, if you're just asking him to do Curry Draymond pick and roll, you want a better passer for that Curry Draymond pick and roll, you ain't gonna find it. And then to be able to kick to Ingram or Durant, it's gonna be nice. It's gonna be nice.
Yeah, and you kind of wonder if whether that may be his path forward to find late career success is we can use his Hall of Fame all-time great level passing and court vision to create for others. You know, there are certain situations that can make a player more or less than his own value, and a spaced floor with other ball handlers is where LeBron is able to thrive.
There's been a lot of talk, or at least rumored suggestions, of could he go back to Cleveland? I think the LeBron championship rings conversation is 100% determined by will he take less money. He could easily be that final piece and still be contributing at a super high level. He wouldn't be the number one, but I do kind of think about those 04 Lakers where Gary Payton and Karl Malone were not slouches. Like, they were still getting 35 minutes a night and still heavily, heavily depended upon for their contributions. Like, that could be the late stage LeBron.
Yeah, I hope that we get to see that too. I hope that's just the decision that he does make, and that this all-time great, possibly greatest ever career doesn't just, you know, kind of fizzles out on a Lakers team that's fighting for a play-in spot, as LeBron puts up meaningless numbers. If you look at, you know, the example of the Cavs that you gave, if you look at what they need, I mean, it's basically LeBron.
Yeah.
And if you look at what LeBron needs to succeed, it's basically what they've got. And I hope that we do get to see at least one more strong playoff run.
If he just decided to sign the minimum, there's a huge number of teams he could take over the top. He will get a 5th ring. He will get a 6th ring. All right. So who are you going for your center then? Does California or Texas have any good centers?
Not really, actually. So this is probably the weak spot in this roster in terms of my list of eligible players. You know, I've got a lot of good scoring guards. I've got a lot of two-way wings that I can choose from.
Mm-hmm.
But the 5 spot is a weaker position for me. However, Nate, without looking it up, do you know who's currently the favorite for Defensive Player of the Year?
Brook Lopez?
It is Brook Lopez. And so at my 5 spot, I'm going to take Splash Mountain. Elite level rim protection, some spacing, a good passer for a 5-man, the ability to mesh if you try to put a smaller player against them, and provides a good drop coverage for Marcus Smart to really be an on-ball pest.
I like it. I like it. It's a good thought because he also can give you some post-up. He gives you the spacing. So what are you envisioning your offense looking like here?
I mean, it's going to have to be a fairly egalitarian system with a fair amount of ball movement, just because we don't really have a main guy who is a terrific on-ball offensive weapon. You know, we don't have a Luka. We don't have, you know, one of these players that you can build the offense around. And so it really is going to have to be dribble handoffs. And, you know, you can get some nice Spain pick and roll with Brook Lopez going as well. It's going to have to be a lot of sharing. Where Lopez can be a very useful contributor, the guy who sets good screens and, as I said, a good passer for a five.
Yeah, it's got some potential. I think my center is just going to clog all this up for you because I'm taking Anthony Davis. Davis has been on a tear this year. After a little bit of the day to Davis jokes, and he did just miss their last game, he has said, you know what? Screw it. Threes are not my thing. I'm just going to pound people down low. And he's getting 64% from the field. And he's getting to the free throw line 11 times a game, hitting almost 90% over those last five.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about wondering whether Kawhi might be done in terms of being that elite caliber of player. A lot of people kind of had that question about Anthony Davis last season, where the offense was uninspired, the defense was lacking in effort. It really didn't make as much of a defensive impact as he has been in the past, where he's been, you know, possibly the best defender in the NBA, all things considered. But this year, I mean, you talk about his last stretch, but even just on the season overall, 26 points, 13 rebounds, over a steal and a half, over two blocks per game, not fouling, getting to the line, protecting the rim. It has been a real bounce back stretch for Anthony Davis, reestablishing himself as one of the best players in the NBA. I mean, do you remember where we had him in our top 100?
We have just outside of the top 10. I think he was 11 or 12.
Yeah, and this, you know, a year or two after being basically considered a top five player. And so it's really great to see him, the big man out of Illinois, establishing himself as a legitimate two-way dominant player again.
I'd also just like to say, for being the Eastern Conference super team, I have selected four players from the Western Conference, as well as one player who is most notably from Western Conference in Kevin Durant.
And yeah, and on the Western Conference, and I've got three Eastern Conference players.
Good job, us. Give people something they're not used to.
Yeah.
But let's, to speed things up, let's do the backward together. So like the next two, then maybe we'll do the forwards and then center. So like we can kind of talk about reserves. But just to recap, my lineup is Curry, Brandon Ingram, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis, representing the eastern half of the United States.
And out west, I've got Marcus Smart, Paul George, Jason Tatum, Kawhi Leonard, and Brook Lopez.
Doesn't feel right to call that the West, but all right. So I have one very easy backcourt selection, and that is Ja Morant. My second backcourt mate gets a little bit tricky, and here's where we might have some gamesmanship, because I don't entirely know that I need more scoring. Like Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker are both great options here, but I don't want to get too cute with it. I think I'm just going to play it safe and go with Booker. I was watching the Suns play here earlier today, and Booker is running more of the point in Chris Paul's absence. He's doing a good job being a distributor as well as spotting up. He's a good leader. And one thing that really stood out to me is he had one possession where he got in there, took advantage of a smaller guy, took him down to the post, didn't make the shot, but he got the offensive rebound, missed the tip-in, got that offensive rebound, missed that shot, got another offensive rebound. One of the big knocks on Booker in past years was that he wasn't rebounding well for his size. And if Booker's able to start using a bit more of his size, as well as being a better distributor, I love it.
If you consider the incredible 180 almost that he's done from where he was considered, even like 3 years ago, empty stat, ball hog, awful defender, one of the worst defenders in the league. And now you look at where he is now, like you said, the point guard, the distributor, you know, an efficient scorer and driver of offense from really all three levels. And one thing that I think kind of got overlooked last year is the Suns had a really good defense. Devin Booker was the primary assignment for pretty much all of the elite scoring guards. You know, Chris Paul wasn't their option to put on elite point guards that needed defending. It was Devin Booker.
What does your backcourt look like coming off the bench?
Now, to balance out the curveball of going with a guy who I initially missed because I only ranked the top, 60 or so players sorted by points per game, I'm going to balance that with some elite offense. Another guy that we've seen have awesome playoff series, who can put up buckets in a hurry, an efficient and effective scorer, is Damian Lillard.
Why didn't you just start Damian Lillard?
I wanted to get some defense in there, Nate.
Does your bench lack firepower?
Hey, if we need offense in the close, we can insert Lillard in, and we can pull Smart or even maybe pull George if we want to go that way. But yeah, I wanted some versatility and some defense in the starting lineup, and I've got my man to lead the offense if and when I need him.
If and when. You better be putting him in the very second Marcus Smart pulls up for three.
Yeah, he's checking in at the 4 minute mark, and he's playing all 12 minutes in the fourth. And then, now here's where I come to that same dilemma that you had of whether to go with trying to balance it out,
double offense,
or not being too cute and just picking the best player. Except it's not exactly too clear cut for me, because I've got a few really good offensive players. I've got Trae Young, I've got De'Aaron Fox, I've got Bradley Beal, I've got James Harden, I've got Zach LaVine. And I could go for one of them, but I don't necessarily think that their skill set's going to be needed. And so I'll bring a little bit more two-way play, and I'll take Jrue Holiday as my other backcourt player.
Aaron's going to quit the pod when he hears that you've now chosen Jrue Holiday and Marcus Smart. Even with team construction, just wild. So how do you picture these two guys interacting?
Similar to my starting lineup, I've got a good balance of offensive creation and defense. When you put in Morant or Booker, or maybe you've got Curry, I've still got one of the best defensive guards in the league, a guy that many people in the league consider to be the best defender in the NBA, who is not an offensive zero, and combined with one of the best creators in recent NBA history, a top 75 all-time player in Damian Lillard.
Yeah, he's a lot better
than Marcus Smart.
Holiday, yeah. Like, Holiday started to get going earlier this year before getting injured and missing a couple of games. It's a short stretch. It's a four-game stretch, where he's averaging 28.5 points per game, hitting 44% of his 9 3-point attempts per game. Whew. Almost 8 assists. Yeah. Jrue Holiday is just a better choice than Marcus Smart. Even if you want to go just offense, defense. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did consider him for the starting spot. I just decided to give Marcus Smart the credit that he deserves for being part of the best offense in the league, whereas the Bucks are one of the worst offenses in the league.
I thought he was your defensive choice. Smart's the worst part of the Celtics offense.
He's the worst part of the best offense in the league, Nate. Chain is only as strong as its weakest link, and the Boston Celtics offensive chain is the best in the NBA.
Listen, you take the talent, and then you figure it out. It'll work. Talent finds a way. And so I'm not going to overthink this. I'm going with Jaylen Brown and Jeremy Grant.
You get some nice size, some two-way wings.
Yeah, trying to bring a nice balanced approach to this. I'm also just, trying to figure out how I'm going to stagger my lineups. And I like the ability that I could have to play these guys along with Ingram and Durant and Anthony Davis and have this incredible, just long wingspan where everyone can shoot and score. But Brown is still just a high caliber player. I mean, he's averaging 25 points per game, basically 6 and 6 on assists and rebounds, top rated offense that he's actually a bigger part of than this Marcus Smart thing. And then as far as Jeremy Grant goes, maybe it's just because I finished the Knicks Blazers game right before we recorded this, where he dropped 44 points and got to the line 28 times. Julius Randle just needs to go into witness protection program after trying to defend him. Now, in selecting Brown and Grant, that does mean that someone of the Zion, Paolo Banchero, Karl Anthony Towns cluster is not going to make my team, which is definitely more talented, but we have the top end talent. We're getting playmakers, guys who can play off ball. So that's that thought.
All right. By playing Paul George up at the two, it's left me a little bit thin in terms of backup forwards. So first one I'm going to go ahead and get is following in with that recent theme of a little bit down performance-wise, missed a few games with injuries. Not a volume scorer, but a guy that can do it down the stretch. Averaging 26-6 for the Miami Heat out of Texas, Jimmy G. Buckets. A guy that can slot right in at the starting four slot when Kawhi pulls a hamstring two games into the series. And then my other guy, you know, you've made a valid criticism of this team that I've leaned defensive. And so I'm going to go the opposite way to give my bench a real offensive punch and take out of California the Chicago Bulls' DeMar DeRozan as a guy who can come in, be borderline unstoppable in the mid-range, a guy that can close for us if we need him to. And yeah, DeMar DeRozan is my backup four.
Are you at all concerned about the Bulls just being terrible this year?
Yeah, they've really taken a step back. Although, I think in terms of net rating, they are not that dissimilar to where they were last year. It's just that last year they had such crazy clutch performance, and then this year they're one of the worst clutch teams in the league.
Well, a big part of that's probably Zach LaVine slumping. I noticed that he hasn't been mentioned yet, but LaVine is down scoring, and he's actually, from 2 years ago, he was averaging 27.5 points. Right now he's averaging 21 points. He is shooting 44% from two compared to 59% 2 years ago. 3-point percentage down to 36%. Still fine, but it was at basically 42%. 2 years ago. It is alarming to see that he has kind of regressed. Fingers crossed that he returns to the mean, because you wouldn't expect a regression at age 27. I am unaware of any sort of lingering injuries, but it is concerning for Chicago, who has their future wrapped up and heavily mortgaged for DeMar, for Vucevic, and trying to build that team around the two of them and LaVine.
And it really does come down to that like, we know what DeMar and Vooch are going to give you, and they've got probably a couple of years more of being able to give it to you. The bench is reasonably strong. You know, Ayo Dosunmu has come out of nowhere as a really valuable contributor. They've got these random guys like Javonte Green, who's still been able to bring good defense. But they really do just go as far as Zach LaVine is able to take them. And if he can't take steps forward to become one of those elite offensive players, you know, this is really it for Chicago.
Yeah. Well, and Vu is a free agent this offseason. DeMar will be one the following offseason. This team is not locked up very long term outside of Zach LaVine, who has another 3 years after this, plus a player option for almost $50 million. So he's probably not going anywhere. So you really want to see that continued growth, because paying a 32-year-old Zach LaVine $52 million if he hasn't developed further is a scary thought.
Yeah, as much as his shot making has taken steps forward, Zach LaVine is a player who athleticism is for him, you know, a real difference maker. And so if that leaping ability and that straight line speed continues to deter at a greater rate going into his 30s, that could be another real struggle for him.
Well, I have a pretty easy pick here for my reserve center. In part, he's one of three centers you sent me on this spreadsheet.
you can play small if you want. Jeremy Grant has played some good minutes at the backup five.
I mean, he has. So has Durant. So has LeBron. But my reserve center is going to be Bam Adebayo, who I've been relatively disappointed in.
Yeah.
Bam is an incredibly skilled player. That doesn't mean that he's an incredibly good player. Like, he can do a lot of the things, and he has a slight mid-range game. He can ball handle, and he can pass, but he's not doing that. The Miami Heat need to transition to being a Bam-focused team, and they've not really made that transition. They've not made him their focal point offensively or defensively, and you can really tell that with just how many minutes Duncan Robinson is getting. Duncan and him had a great synergy. Instead, they're trying to do more Jimmy Butler-esque type players. You know, I'd like to see the Heat emphasize Adebayo, but we're just not there yet.
You wonder how much of that is just a lack of belief in his ability to do that. He's already one of the best defenders in the league, but we've wanted more offensively. And, you know, there are two sides to that. The exact point that you just made, which is the team is not built to fit his offensive strengths. But then there's also the question of whether they have decided not to build that way because they don't have faith that he has that ability yet to lead an offensive team built around him.
All right, who are your centers? And then I'll let you jump straight into wild cards.
I'll take the only other good center that I have available, who's having probably the best year of his career, for the Indiana Pacers, averaging now 19 points per game, has improved where he was lacking as a defensive rebounder, rebounding well, blocking 2.8 shots per game. And I'll take Miles Turner as my backup five. Gives me another option as a floor spacer and as a defensive anchor.
Your team's going down so hard. I told you this. I offered to change this up with you. I offered. I said, listen, I'll give you Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York City. We go big cities versus small cities. I didn't tell you this, but I thought about giving you Texas, New York, and California, and just let's see what you can build off of that. But
you didn't want to do the basketball civil war, so this is what we ended up at.
Ooh, I did not want to try to figure out which which of these players spent their life above and below the Mason-Dixon line. That seemed like a rough way to spend an afternoon.
Alright, do you want me to pick wild cards?
Yeah.
Okay. I will go ahead and, in honor of our absentee co-host, I will take a guy to give me some more pace. You know, the guys that I've got, they're going to want to play slow. And sometimes that's just not an option to have efficient offense. I've got the starting point guard from the best offense in the league. So now I'll get the starting point guard from the second best offense in the league and take De'Aaron Fox. A guy that I won't intend to be in my rotation, but if it turns out, like you suspect it will, that we just cannot get enough offense out of Marcus Smart and Drew Holiday, a guy that I can plug in to give me some bit offensive efficiency.
All right, then who's the last guy on the team?
I'm gonna throw another curveball at you.
Mason Plumlee. You've just decided you're going to go all Coach K on us and take Mason Plumlee. I see it.
You're not going to expect this one because he's on the worst team in the NBA. But in the same vein of Fox, a guy that I want to push the pace, but who can provide a little bit more size and defensive versatility. So I'm going to take Cade Cunningham out of Texas as my wild card spot. A guy who has been quite impressive individually, hasn't been able to turn that into team success, but with more talent around him, his ability to get downhill, to create, to be versatile defensively, I think that we'll see him perform better than what he has been able to so far.
It's a good call. In a limited role, that's what you want. You want someone who can exceed that role. Now, does it bother you at all that he might not play the rest of the year?
Health has given my starting four being Kawhi something that I didn't factor in heavily.
Fair. I'm really interested to see how the rest of the Pistons play without Cunningham. Killian Hayes has been bumped back into the starting lineup, and I continue to stand by Hayes. Hayes is a solid defensive player. I think we've miscast him. Hayes is closer to a Lonzo Ball type of player, which his pre-draft comp was James Harden. So I think we just missed on who he was. If we compared him to Lonzo Ball and you're like, this is what you got, this is fine. This is about where you'd expect him to be. He came in super young. Let's give him a little bit more time. I've been looking a lot at my list, and one of my choices is pretty clear to me. I'm going to choose Mikal Bridges just to have another defensive wing. And Bridges is actually showing some offensive shot creation. You know, trying to post up and trying to attack out of the pick and roll a little bit. Like, he's not just a catch and shoot player, which I've really enjoyed seeing that growth from him, that development. So that leaves me with a lot of good choices. I don't really have like a true pure point guard. You know, I've looked at the inverse of what you said of wanting young legs. I've looked at Chris Paul to maybe bring in some old legs.
If you want someone, you know, to really work on team chemistry, Udonis Haslem is eligible for.
Oh, really? That's a bold offer. And I'm going to choose a Udonis Haslem type player. Okay. Someone who has spent most of the last couple of years on the bench. I'm going to go with Zion Williamson.
Udonis Haslem type?
Is that not how you would describe Zion as a Udonis Haslem type player?
I mean, I didn't get to see a lot of Udonis, of prime Udonis Haslem, but I suppose they do share a lot of time sitting at the end of the bench, so they do have that in common.
Yeah, I mean, who do you think's played more games in the last 4 years?
Oh no. Surely Zion.
I did check. It is Zion by a semi-sizable margin. Okay,
thank God.
But I'm standing behind my transition of Udonis Haslem type player. I don't really have a like traditional four. Durant and LeBron have both transitioned to being more of that four, but I like the idea of, hey, you know, I've got a lot of guys that just draw fouls, and I can just throw in Zion and just say, all right, bowling ball, go to the rim. I've got shooters spacing, just attack. Let's put this Western Conference team in foul trouble. And I think that's where I'm at. I wish he was having a better year thus far. He's already missed a couple of games, and since returning from his latest injury, hoping to see him continue to get healthy. Good luck. You're gonna be in foul trouble the whole day. Zion averages 8.4 free throws per game.
If you were to say, what do you think would be your team's biggest weakness, your biggest concern?
I would worry that we might fall into too much ISO ball. You know, LeBron, Durant, that's definitely a possibility. I'd really like to see them do more of a Golden State egalitarian moving without the ball type of offense. And I think we've got enough young guys here to make that happen. But I absolutely love my team's long wing defense. So I'm not too concerned.
For me, I think the real issue could be just the offense just bogging down. We've seen it at times for the Clippers. We saw it at times for the Celtics, who, you know, those two teams make up a lot of my team, and that would be the real concern, is just the offense bogging down without LeBron James or without Steph Curry, who can, you know, really make an offense move.
I will also say I do have a slight concern here. To get back to the example of the Denver Nuggets versus the 76 ABA All-Stars, the Nuggets played like their normal rotation, which means the guy that got 5 minutes a night in the regular season got 5 minutes a night in that game. They stayed within their strategy and consistency. Now, your team is also a conglomeration of players, so it's kind of a fair ground that way. But I would worry about them.
I guess a strength to my team could be I've got a lot of players that do play together. And if you look at the starting lineup in particular of Smart, George Tatum, Leonard Lopez, that is a fairly consistent lineup in terms of how both of the Celtics and the Clippers play, with a drop big, with size on the wing, playing two-way, the ability to switch if we bring in a center. I don't think that the play style for these guys will be too much of an adjustment, which could be a strength. And the familiarity of two sets of two of the starters playing together. The final piece of the team, which I hadn't considered, but it worked out quite well. Who do you think are the two best coaches in the NBA?
So, as someone that's coached, the best skill is just understanding your team and your players, which would lead me to say Steve Kerr.
I mean, the other major candidates are, I guess, Eric Spoelstra, Nick Nurse, Greg Popovich, if you still want to consider him among them. Ty Lue is someone that's highly respected for his ability to make adjustments.
Well, so I've started to Google because as soon as you said Nick Nurse, I was like, ah, he's a guy whose X's and O's I really love and the versatility. And, you know,
He is from Iowa, which I think qualifies for me. So
it
he's going to be
does.
my coach.
It does. I will also give you Steve Kerr because he is,
He's from California.
yes, born in Lebanon, but pretty much raised in the West Coast. Now I'm just like throwing names at a wall while trying to figure out who might.
You may just have to go with Pop.
Is Pop even eligible for me?
Indiana.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, from East Chicago, Indiana. I'll take Pop. That's. Whew. I'll take those rings. Let him slap those knuckles on the table. Put him and LeBron out drinking wine together. You think he'll be able to figure out what Anthony Davis does best? Give me Pop.
And then we get to see one thing that, you know, NBA fans have always wanted, which is LeBron with Pop.
It really does just feel fitting. But unfortunately, that is one of the teams LeBron cannot go to and still be a championship contender.
Would that be a nice way for Greg Popovich to finish his career? You know, he and LeBron both
No.
changed teams. No.
No.
Yeah, he really is the Spurs.
Popovich is not allowed to ever change teams. It's an unwritten rule of the universe. Who would feel more weird to be on a different team, Pop or Curry?
Yeah, probably Pop, I guess. All right, I like it. I like it. I think it's only right we go to someone impartial to decide who truly wins this, and maybe we'll give that update next week.
Sounds good. I did have one random question for you. Would you rather have Jalen Brunson or Anfernee Simons?
I think Brunson fits in better. I think he does better as a higher end role player than what Simons does. And I'm worried about Simons more defensively, so I'll take Brunson.
I was watching in the Blazers play the Knicks, and I'm like, these are the same guys. And then I pulled up their contract, and it's basically the exact same money. And Simons is 3 years younger, but it just they are basically the same player. Simons is a little bit more efficient. Brunson's maybe a little bit better passer, but they are the same player.
Right. I think one final question is, who do you think is going to be the most mad on Twitter for being snubbed from your team?
I could see Paolo getting no, it's Donovan Mitchell. Mitchell would be really upset that he is the New York guy. He was left off this list. But the thing he brings is offensive firepower. I watch him and Garland play sometimes. They're just not tall enough. You watch them both and they score, but you can start putting bigger wings on them and it starts to slow them down. And if their bigs don't have it going, their bigs aren't rebounding well, there's just an upper limitation on being a shoot first small guard.
And I mean, the real decision about him comes down to him versus Booker. And I think most people think that Booker is a better overall player. And that's the way that you win, and that's the way I would have gone too.
So it was a pretty easy choice.
For me, the most notable snub is probably James Harden, but he doesn't have Twitter. And so the guy that's going to be making the big fuss, I think, is Trae Young.
Yeah, that's a bold choice to choose Marcus Smart and leave off Trae Young.
He is not going to like that.
No, I don't like that.
Well, listeners, if you've got an opinion, you can contact us. Nate, do you want to give them the ways to contact us?
Yeah, we're on Twitter, Hoops Temple Pod. We're on TikTok, Hoops Temple. We have an email, hoopstemple@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. Love to hear from you.